You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
Good morning, Evansville and Tri-State. Welcome to Radio Rehab, where we always try to bring issues to the community that we know affect all of us, mainly substance abuse and mental health issues. Anything going on in the community around drug and alcohol issues, around our families, our schools, our jobs. We try to bring you a unbiased but yet educated show, mainly to educate the community and inform you about substance abuse and help people understand how and where to get help and meet people that have recovered and are still recovering, et cetera, et cetera. Ever since the beginning of Radio Rehab, quite frankly, when I first started this, Mr. Landers and I weren't really sure. We knew there was a need. We weren't sure where this show would go, and it's done so well, we've increased it to an hour now. Well, a couple of the beginning advocates of Radio Rehab are here this morning to share with us just a little about themselves and what's made them so dedicated to this cause. They've been real fans of Radio Rehab. They are very concerned about the drug problem in the community. You all know Marvelline. Marvelline's an advocate. Marvelline and Kelly both say what they think people need to hear in a language people need to hear it. They're very concerned about the substance abuse problem, especially in the black community, as well as the community in general. Marvelline, I think, was the first person I heard phrase this problem as a cancer in our community. And she has really been dedicated to helping people understand this cancer. And Kelly has joined her in collaborating and trying to bring people around the table to talk about it. So I'm very proud to have them here. Good morning, you all.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for coming again and being a fan of the show and a fan of people getting better. Marvelline, how you doing? Why don't you kick us off and tell us what you've been doing since the last time you were here?
Well, let me go back to my ignorance about the drug culture in our community and how sometimes you got your mind doing this, that, and the other, and you just think, well, maybe it'll go away and things will get better. My background consisted of a very close-knit family in rural Kentucky. We had a lot of land. My father was a protector. He had a shotgun, he had a rifle, he had handguns. Anybody came on our land without permission, my father might say, you got to get going. He wouldn't shoot anybody, but if he had to protect his children, the six of us, he would have. I never seen drugs except alcohol then. Alcohol was the drug that I've seen a lot of men destroy their lives. Mm-hmm. The women always took care of their children, and the fathers too, but you know, after you go work for, quote-unquote, the white man, you come home, you're going to have your little taste. I remember my father, when he'd have his coffee in the mornings, he'd take he always had a half a pint of something, and he'd take a cap full and put in his coffee. And he'd go on to the coal mines and work, and they did the land, my uncle and him. And it was so, even though everything was segregated then, those were the best years of my life. Reality struck me when we moved to Evansville. My father's job, he worked at Chrysler. He retired from Chrysler in St. Louis. But when they were in Evansville, moved to Evansville, he drove backwards and forth every day. He was a strong man. He was not a big man, but he was a giant to me because he loved his family. But we'd have these basket dinners every third Sunday in July. And we had this one-room church. But there was this part of the land at the church that was a little bit lower than the church. And the men would come, some of them. They didn't come for the service or the dinner. They came to drink and play cards and shoot dice. And my mother would always say, when you go to the basket dinner today, don't go down under the hill. I never knew what that meant. I found out later that the men were having a party. So the alcohol was the choice of drugs then.
And accepted.
And accepted, yes. Very much accepted. I never seen my father drunk, except one time he was a little tipsy when we lived in Evansville. We first moved to Evansville. My mother asked him to put a light bulb in the ceiling light, and he got up on the ladder, and he sort of, you know, almost, the ladder kind of shook. I thought, oh, he's been drinking. But that's the only time I ever seen him, I think, close to being drunk. He was a wonderful man. And then I got involved in the movement in the 60s. It was more social issues then. It wasn't, I wasn't focusing on the drug problem in our community. I was focusing on the social injustices and people being poor, whether they were black or white. That's why I spent 29 years at Legal Services to give them the opportunity to live decently. When a landlord says you've got to go and they have rundown property and they charge you high prices, and we did a lot of evictions in court. We did a lot of, I was a paralegal there. I did a lot of Medicaid cases when people could not afford to insurance. And if they were disabled, they had a right. That's their right. That's Absolutely. What the law said. So those were the days that I was considered the professional hellraiser. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of settled down. And a year ago in December, it was brought to my attention by a very prominent person in our community who happens to work in the judicial system, that he is tired of sending black men to jail. I wasn't surprised, but I wasn't shocked, but I was surprised that it came from him. Mm-hmm. And that threw up a red flag for me, and I never looked back. And we do have a lot of black men. Women are going now, too.
50%, isn't it? Yes, 49 or 50% of the people incarcerated.
Yes. That's troubling to me. And I'm glad he brought it to my attention, because I kind of have my hands in a lot of stuff in the community. But I think that if this cancer, we can't get rid of some of this cancer, we're not going to see the next generation is either going to be incarcerated. And there are kids that go to college, okay. And there are kids that are good students. Mm-hmm. But there are kids that use drugs. Mm-hmm. And this is an initiative to prevent and educate. We can't do a lot about someone that's already there. We can talk with them. We've got people like Steve Brown that has been going to the prisons and the jails for mm-hmm. years. Those are our heroes. You never hear about him a whole lot. But I want to say to him, if he's listening or someone that knows him that's listening, I thank him for that. Mm-hmm. I happen to work out at the what used to be the old safe house, this community corrections, and sometimes when I have to take some information down to the male dorm, he's in there. Mm-hmm. He's talking to the guys. So
trying to give them hope.
Yes, and so I'm going to turn this over to Kelly and let her talk a little bit about, and then I'll come back to the meeting we had on the 21st of January, the planning committee for this drug task force, and some of the people that's involved. Kelly, talk about, I can't talk about recovery because I've never used drugs. When I was young in high school, the closest I seen to drugs was, I was in study hall, the library one day, and this lady was, one of the students was sitting across the table from me, and she opened up her hand. She said, 25 cents, yellow jackets. Those were pills.
Mm-hmm. Nebutals.
You know what? I knew something was wrong with that. So why would she try to hide it and charge me? So I said, no. And
Marlene says, no yellow jackets for me.
So that was the end of that. But I want Kelly to talk about recovery a little bit and what she's doing besides all the things that she do.
Okay? Oh, great. Yes, thank you, Marlene.
Right. Well, thank you. I was really happy when Marlene asked me to be a part of this drug task force. You know, being a person in recovery from alcohol and drugs, you know, I thank God for the 12-step program and for my relationship with Jesus Christ, which has been very, very instrumental
yes.
in securing a few 24 hours of sobriety. But one of the most discouraging things as a person in recovery is to see the lack of services and treatments available for people who are trying to recover from alcohol and drug addiction. You know, unfortunately, right now in the Evansville area, we have one facility, Stepping Stones. They do a great job. Unfortunately, in my opinion, the program is not long enough. It's not easily accessible. Oftentimes, there is a waiting list. And so it can be very discouraging for a person who is struggling, who really has a desire to quit, but there's no help available. And that was one of my main concerns and reasonings for wanting to be a part of this task force. I am the founder of Restoration Ministries. And what we do at Restoration Ministries, we work on a one-on-one basis with people who are recovering from substance abuse issues. Some of the things that we do, besides one-on-one mentoring and counseling, we do referrals for services, and I have some connections with some other facilities in the state of Kentucky, and we have been instrumental in helping people get into placement. One of the things that we're looking at for our area is transitional living and recovery houses, because if you're a person that has been involved in the drug world for 10, 12, 15 years, everyone that you know, your friends, your family, your whole world has been around drug usage. Once you go to Stepping Stones and you stay there for 14 days and they discharge you, where do you go? And unfortunately, that's why we see so many people relapse on drugs, because they have to go back into a drug environment. There is no safe place for them to live. And so that's one of the things that we are endeavoring to do in the very near future at Restoration Ministries. And so, you know, once again, just real excited to be a part of this task force, because we have identified some areas, you know, in particular, the lack of treatment. You know, it's one thing to lock people up in jail for being drug dealers, but what happens to the drug user? Yeah. You know, there are no services available for us. You know,
and some of the dealers really just have a quarter or a half a gram.
Yeah, and
there
some
aren't
of the people,
really dealer profile.
Exactly. Some of the people that are catching dealing charges are not dealers. They're actually drug addicted. They're the ones who have to finance their drug addiction by going to COP, if you will, or SCORE for you. You have the money. You don't know where the drug dealer is, so you give me your money. I go purchase the dope for you in exchange for some monetary or some part of the drug, and you could actually be a CI, a confidential informant. And they know that I'm merely just a crackhead, for instance, and they set me up to be a buyer so that they can use me to turn around and catch the drug dealer, who definitely needs to be off the street. But after I've made the buy, I've been arrested for possession, I've now been given the title of dealer, they get the bigger person, I get locked up for 30 days, 90 days, catch a felony, whatever the case may be, and when I get out, there's still no treatment available for me. You know, that's one of my concerns.
That's definitely a weakness in our community.
And I don't think drug addiction is really seen as an illness. Exactly like Marvelline said, a cancer.
Yeah.
It really is an illness. You know, contrary to popular belief, nobody wakes up and says, hey, guess what? I'm going to be a drug addict today.
No.
You know, it's just not part of your top 10 things to do before you leave this earth.
Well, the American Medical Association determined it was a disease in 1954, and insurance companies were asked and called to pay for that. That was alcoholism. I think the drug movement of the 60s has challenged the criminal justice system, but it's definitely an illness.
Most definitely.
Yes.
And I know Marvelline kind of, you started that whole phrasing it a cancer in our community. I think we're definitely more compassionate with cancer patients than we are drug or alcohol addicted patients, but it is an illness.
Do you ever hear, I'm going to go to the churches again, and you can be criticized, but the truth is the light.
Here comes the mail.
We got to step up to the plate. We've got to talk about it. When someone is ill with a physical impairment, we'll say, pray for so-and-so, or pray for sister or brother this. But if it's a mental, we even discriminate as it relates to mental impairments.
Nobody gets up to pray for somebody mentally impaired.
We don't know. You don't talk about it. So how are you going to pray for someone if you don't talk about it?
So the family, because I noticed at your church last week, they asked people to come up. that need help or
heal. Oh, yeah, for prayer.
But nobody goes up to pray for somebody addicted or mentally ill?
Well, I'm talking about openly.
That's what I mean.
Let's
pray. Yeah, I didn't hear it.
Because they're in treatment at the mental health center.
You don't talk about it.
You don't hear that.
I agree.
If you are at the deaconess or and you have a leg broken or something like that,
they announce
they're going to announce that.
And they're going to come visit you. They're going to see to your needs.
So can you now? So if you think that's bad, what about if a person is addicted to drugs and the whole church knows it?
Nobody talks.
Is that because the family
doesn't want it brought out?
Well, when we don't know how to talk about something, when it's our kids, if we don't know how to talk about it, usually what it said is you need to stop using that mess.
Just quit, turn a light bulb.
Because we don't know how to talk about it. So education, this is a vision that I had. I mean, it's not just my vision. It's everybody's vision that's on the task force. When we started this, I thought, how much do I know? How much do I need to learn about this cancer? But to me, it is a cancer because... Mm-hmm. And I've never, ever talked about this. And maybe if I talk about it today, it may save somebody's life that's out there, or the mother, the father that's listening to this show that will say, I need to maybe make some contact with Stepping Stone or the mental health center, or maybe somebody from the task force to see where do I go, because I know my son is using drugs because his whole personality is different. He comes home, it's strange hours, or he's got money that he should not have.
Or he's stealing.
He's not working nowhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
So do parents just deny it?
I don't think they deny it. I think it's lack of knowing what to say or
where
how
to go.
Approach the situation. Don't you think so, Kelly?
Well, yeah, but also the whole addiction of drug disease is it's cunning, baffling, and powerful. And unfortunately, we... people that suffer from that disease, we do a great job of keeping it a secret. See, part of the reason why drug addiction is allowed to continue is because the drug addicted person usually goes to great measures to hide it, to cover it up, to explain it away. And oftentimes the family, we are very willing to accept those explanations that really don't make sense to us.
The alibis,
just maybe, instead of being able to face it.
Because you want to believe them.
Because you want to believe them, because it is your child, because it is your sister, because it is your brother. And more often than helping, we fall into enabling. And like you said, Marvelline, one of the best things that we could do is educate ourselves about the disease. How does it affect a person? What are some of the things that I need to do as a family member to offer legitimate help, so that my help doesn't turn into enabling and I'm actually allowing the cycle to continue. One of the things that I've also noticed in the churches is the church's unwillingness to accept 12-step programs as viable programs. Again, I am a born-again Christian, and I know that my recovery would not be possible
without treat your disease.
My recovery would not be possible without Jesus Christ. I know that, but I also know that as a recovering person, I need some place where I can go talk to other like-minded people who have experienced some of the same experiences that I had. And be able to talk about either what I've been through, what I'm going through, any possible struggles, ask for assistance, and not have that person across the room looking at me with the eyebrow arched as if. And that's what people do. And so that's why 12-step programs are so important. In addition to your relationship. You can't do one without the other. And churches, a lot of times they don't want to accept a 12-step program. They say things to people like, you don't need a 12-step program. All you need is Jesus. Well, yes, you're right.
That's right.
I really do need Jesus.
But you need to treat the illness, too.
Who do I call in the middle of the night when all the church members are at home, they're in bed asleep, and I'm struggling?
And if you have cancer, does the doctor say, just pray? No, you got to go take the treatment for the rest of your life. Your lifestyle has to change. You're a diabetic.
And that's why the program is so, beneficial, because in those moments when normal people are unavailable, only a person in a 12-step recovery program is going to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and talk with you on the phone only a person in a 12-step program is going to get up and drop whatever they're doing to come to your rescue, correct, to be of assistance, to help you get through that next moment.
That language of the heart.
Exactly. And that's why they're so important. And that's one of the reasons why I think, too, you know, we're not seeing a lot of, you know, recovery, you know, long-term recovery. People are able to stop using for a little while, and then they try to do it by themselves without the support and assistance of other people.
Mm-hmm. That's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they go to church with the heart and the soul to get cured.
Mm-hmm. But hopefully, Lisa and Kelly, that, let's say with this task force, mm-hmm, we can have, let's say we can openly announce that by flyer, by bulletins in the church, mm-hmm, bulletin, mm-hmm, that there are 3 to 4 people that if you ever need, mm-hmm, someone that's on the edge, yeah, mm-hmm, someone that clearly understands addictions, mm-hmm, and you know, is willing to be that 1 of 4 in, mm-hmm, each church, if, mm-hmm, we could just do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because when I'm like you, Kelly, I'm a believer, a strong believer, because I know the only reason why I'm where I am today, it didn't have nothing to do with me.
Exactly.
Nothing to do with me. So, but I have a responsibility.
That's right.
You have to do some footwork. Yeah.
I have a responsibility to do what, if I see something wrong and I don't try to do something about it, people said, don't complain. I said, no, the Lord going to get you. That's exactly what I say, and I believe that.
And you all were talking about HIV. Oh, just a second. Do we have a caller? Good morning.
Yes. Hi, Lisa. This is Kathy.
Oh, hi, Kathy.
Hello, Marvelline. Hello, Kelly.
Hey, Kathy.
I want to tell you guys, you are doing a great job. You know, you said some really strong points today in reference to this cancer. And there are some, you know, the thing with the community and especially the families and people that don't understand it is that they're, you know, I see they're not wanting to understand it because they just simply don't care.
Until it affects them, yeah.
Yes, and I want to say, you know, this interview that you guys are doing today, hopefully there's someone out there who can, you know, that's got someone that's suffering from this, because I know I still suffer from the disease, but I'm in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if they can get on board and listen to what you guys are having to say and what you're trying to do, you know, if we all pull together, this can work in our lives today.
Of course.
Yes,
it
can.
I want to say thank you for taking the time and the effort to reach out to the community, you know, against this cancer.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thanks, Kathy.
Thanks, Kathy. Kathy's also a part of our task force.
Yeah.
And she's also a very viable person in the recovery community who, once she got sober, she reaches back and she helps other people get sober, too.
And she knows it has to be more than church.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I love you guys. Thank you.
Love you,
bye,
too.
Kathy.
I wanted to say, when I first came in this morning, you all were talking about HIV and AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember in the 80s? When nobody wanted to talk about AIDS in the community.
Mm-hmm.
I was at your church last Sunday, Marvelline, and they had fans that said Matthew 25 on,
mm-hmm,
them,
mm-hmm,
which is an AIDS resource.
Sure is. We have it in our church.
25 years ago, AIDS was a nasty word, and now you've got fans in your churches,
right,
saying maybe you guys could get fans eventually in less than 25 years that say recovery is possible.
Think back. They never really started talking about it until Magic Johnson. When Magic and what was the movie star's name, the white guy?
Rock Hudson.
Rock Hudson.
That's when.
And Elton John got involved. Elizabeth
Before
Taylor.
Then, just go ahead and die. We don't care.
Mm-hmm.
But all at once, when those two people came out and said, well, we didn't know that Rock died from it until
after
he actually died.
Right.
But that changed the whole funding. And
but you've had a lot of people in the black community, and in the churches you have ministers that say they're in recovery from addiction.
No? We have are people that claim their deliverance, which is their deliverance, which is supernaturally done so by the power of God and power of God alone. A lot of people will profess to be delivered, as I am, but unfortunately a lot of people don't want to acknowledge that they once were. We have a whole lot of people in the church that used to use drugs. Unfortunately, not many of them are willing to share it openly.
Be open like you.
Yeah.
Okay. And do we have another caller? Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
God bless you. Enjoying the program. A lot of rich information. Good morning to each panel member.
Thank you.
I'd like to know two things. How can another person be a part of the task force or get involved in it? The second question is there federal funding for such a program?
Is that it?
Or do you have any, you know, do you have other resources? I'm really excited about it and being blessed by all the conversation. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Kim Hinton, by the way. Hi, Ms. Marvelline.
Who is this?
Kim Hinton.
Oh,
thank you for calling.
Hi, Kim. How are you?
Money does help.
Yeah. Okay, let me just say a little bit about that. Kim, you still there?
Yes.
Okay. The Community Action Program has the Minority Health Coalition. Emily Winters Brown is the director of that program.
Wonderful.
I am on the advisory committee, and Lisa Allen, who also works at CAPE, is director of the Foster Grandparent Program. They have come on board with the task force. There is no rules, no regulations about who can serve. We need all the help that we can get. What I can do is give you my email address and let you and you email me to let me know what your email address is, address, a little bit about you, that sort of thing. It's my full name. M-A-R-V as in Victor, A-L-I-N-E, P-R-I-N-C-E, at att.net. Did you get that?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And the funding, we don't have a lot of funding right now, but if I need to have something copied for a meeting, the Community Action Program has a little money to help us with that. So right now, we are able to send out information when we need to make copies of with their agency. They've been a lot of help, and I do really deeply appreciate that.
So how do you get into the task force?
I'm going to talk a little bit about the meeting that we had in October. In October, I think it was the 22nd, it was a planning committee meeting. And the reason why the people that were on the planning committee is because they volunteered to be on it. We don't handpick anybody for this organization for specific roles. In the future, we're hoping that people will co-chair committees. I think that's better. It doesn't work a person to death if they co-chair a committee. And I'm going to talk a little bit about who is involved in a few minutes, but my email address, email me if you need to so that I can have that information. This has been a journey for me. It's taken me, I'll say we're like 60 to 70% there where we need to be. And I'll talk about the composition and how we want to structure this organization so that people don't become weary and leave. The people that signed up to be on the task force, the drug task force, are people that have committed to 2 years or more. I don't want people coming in and out. We need people that are committed to 2 years or more because we need to see some results. And this is an initiative to educate. And the majority of the people that filled out the questionnaire that I sent them about 6 months ago, the key thing was education. We can make choices in our life, but we can make good ones or we can make bad ones. But we need to educate. And I think all the other stuff will fall into place. One of the first things we need to do is get a mission statement. And we've got 4 or 5 people that have committed to work on a mission statement. So with that, I'm going to stop and see if we got any more questions. Or do you have any more questions, Kim?
Okay. That's wonderful.
Kim, don't go away. We have to take a break, but we'll come back and talk more about this coalition, the collaboration, and what some of the needs they've seen and heard are for the committee. And we'd love for you to call back if you want to and give us some advice on how to make it a good, strong engine in our community. Thank you.
Thank you.
understand and get educated about the drug problem in the black community and it, how it affects our whole community, and the alcohol problem as well. They've started a task force, and we're just now talking about the task force, what it is, when it meets, what it does, et cetera, et cetera. So thank you and welcome back. Kelly, how did you get on this wonderful task force, and why did you get on it?
I was contacted by Marvelline, and she, you know, informed me that she was putting together the task force. And when I first heard about it, I was very excited and knew it was something that I wanted to do, to be a part of. Like I said, I am a person that is in recovery. I know firsthand the challenges of trying to get into treatment. I know firsthand the challenges of being a professional person trying to get treatment, a Christian trying to get treatment, you know. So I had all of those things, those obstacles in my way, and by the grace
of... Do you think being a woman and being black was an obstacle as well?
Or? As far as getting into treatment, no. I think here the problem is, again, we only have one facility with a very limited number of beds, and I think one of the things that we really have to come to the realization is that if you have been in some form of addiction for a long-term period of time, 14 days is just simply not enough, and perhaps for some people that do 30 days.
Do we have another caller already? Hello?
Yes. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Thank you for calling.
Thank you for having me. I like to say that you're doing a wonderful job of bringing this issue out in our community, and I enjoy listening to the people that you have come on, and I appreciate you for just embracing our community and embracing the people that we love.
Oh, thank you.
In saying that, I would like to know, I have two questions. Are you all looking for a place that maybe you can set up a transitional housing or a transitional place for people who are coming out of rehab and need some additional, like maybe supervision or living arrangements? That's my first question. And secondly, I was wondering, do they have any kind of meetings that they hold for people who need maybe something, a meeting place to go to in the middle of the night when the devil is his most busy, and I guess the urge may come on people, you know, more strongly than during the daytime?
Wow.
Well, that after midnight stuff's for the young.
Well, I don't know I don't know if I agree with that. Actually, we are actively looking for a place. There is a committee of us who have, we've already begun the process of developing the program, the services, and all we're doing now is waiting on God to materialize the place and knowing that because it will be so beneficial to so many individuals and their families and our community at large, we know that it's just a matter of time before that vision is realized. Also, there is not a particular place here in Evansville. There are in many other cities all over the country that have sober clubs or sobriety clubs that are open 24 hours a day. And so right now here in the Evansville area, we do not have that. The best that we have to offer at this point are the people that are in recovery. And there is a list of meetings, AA, CA, NA, and even there are 12-step spiritual-based meetings at some of the churches. You know, American Baptist East, we have that church that does a 12-step Christian-based meeting. Then we have some of the other churches. You know, when we talked about what the churches aren't doing, that's not to say all of the churches in our community are not doing something. You know, we have many of the churches that utilize their, that allow us to utilize their space to hold meetings. We have a meeting Sunday night at Memorial Baptist Church, Sunday night, 7:30, is called Miracle on Canal Street. Mm-hmm. We have a meeting on Saturdays at Zion Baptist Church. It's called the RSG Group. It's at 6 o'clock p.m. on Saturdays. We also have...
Isn't there a midnight meeting, too, at CNL on
there's
Fridays?
There's a midnight meeting at CNL, which is at midnight at over midnight. On Columbia there.
And that's the latest, the midnight.
That's the very latest one, right.
Okay, Kelly, but what I want the caller to understand is that what you're talking about has been in existence for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
this is not a part of what you do of the task force. Eventually, we hope to work with this
right.
so that we can say, with all these great people we have on the task force,
right.
that we need a transitional place, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
We can maybe put the pressure
exactly.
on the appropriate people
right.
to do
that. That's what we're doing.
So,
yeah. Caller, do you have a house?
Yes.
You do?
Yes. And I have been trying to... I have reached out to many different agencies because this is a program that I had wanted to start for a long time, or to provide a place for whomever wants to use the house for that type of program.
Wow.
For people who are incarcerated, who are coming out and need family housing, or
wow.
who are drug addicted and who need to, but they would have to, you know, share the house with several other people
okay.
in order to be able to just, you know, pay the rent. And that's all of it I request, because I see that there is a need in our community, and any way I can help, because I've, not personally, but I've been affected through several family members of my own through drugs and alcohol that
mm-hmm.
I've lost in the last year
sure.
due to this same situation.
Right,
and
this cancer.
I've seen, and I want to be a part of this.
Okay.
But if there's people that are more experienced than myself, if I can't do anything but provide a place for them to utilize, I'm willing to do that.
Okay. See, the cool thing about their coalition is all you need to do to be involved in it is to have some experience, strength, and hope.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like you qualify.
Mm-hmm. Let me give you some contact information on how you can reach me. My name is Kelly Scroggins, and our agency is Restoration Ministries.
You write it down.
We can be reached at 812-305-9677. And if you get in touch with me, we will talk with you, help point you in the right direction, you know, partner you up with the right people and see, you know, what we can make happen. And yeah, like you said, Marvelyn, that's the great thing about our coalition. Our coalition in and of itself is not looking to do these individual things. We're looking at finding out what the need is in the community and then using our strength of numbers, strength of presence, and people that are involved in different parts of our community. We have people in our judicial system, our legal
mm-hmm.
system, our law system. We have people in social work and, you know, nonprofit, and all of us coming together, you
yeah,
know.
They don't handpick the members, but I think one thing that if you're a research-oriented kind of person,
mm-hmm.
this may not be your coalition
mm-hmm.
to join, because this group are people that if you've been affected by one person,
mm-hmm.
that's all the research
mm-hmm.
and evidence-based you need
right.
to be on this coalition. There's plenty of evidence and research in our families and in our churches that tell us this
mm-hmm.
is a major problem.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a research person that needs a bunch of statistics, this may, I don't know, this may not be the place for you.
No, we definitely want to be a committee or a coalition of action.
Yeah.
I know that's one of the things that Marvelina said. We don't want this time next year to still be in the process of doing some things.
Exactly.
She's ready. We're ready to get
take
on board.
Action.
And take action, identify what some of our problems are, and one by one address or attack those issues if necessary.
Mm-hmm. Does that make sense to you, caller?
Yes,
good.
Absolutely. And that's been one of my problems, that when I've tried to reach out, I have not had the response from people. They're talking about it, but they're not ready to take action.
Well, again, my number is 812-305-9677, and if you give me a call, we will definitely get together, have a meeting, and see what the vision you have and go from there. But it definitely will not go unresponded. We thank you very much
yes,
for your interest.
Thank you.
We really do.
Hang
thank
on,
you.
The miracle's just that. Three. Hang on, the miracle's just 3 minutes away. So, Marvelline, you were going to talk a little about
mm-hmm.
the coalition, how to access
well,
it, and
let me just say this: you can't if you don't understand. There's not a whole lot you can do if you don't understand a situation, and the same thing goes with cultural differences.
Mm-hmm.
We, as a task force, cannot expect to go out and talk in the community about what we do or how we do it without understanding the African-American community.
Hmm.
It's as simple as that.
That's right.
So I'm hoping, I'm not hoping, it will be done. When, I don't know. that we as task force members will engage in some training, bring in a trainer to talk about cultural differences. If we don't do that, I don't think that we can do what we are setting out to do.
That's right.
The judges, the legal people, the people that's different from us have got to start to come to the black community.
Is this like a civil rights issue all over again?
Sort of.
Yeah.
You can't come to us when you're running for office and want us to vote for you, and that's the only time you come. You can't come when it's an election year. The one thing I can say about a person who was formerly the mayor here, he always showed up, whether mm-hmm. it was election year, didn't matter. I think he dearly loved the black community.
And I think this cause was near and dear to him
yes.
as well. Yes,
yes.
Marvelyn, we've got another caller.
Okay.
Hi, caller.
Hello.
Hi.
My name is Joanne, and I'm just wanting to say that I think what you're doing today and the development of a task force is definitely needed
mm-hmm.
in our community. My son is on drugs, mm-hmm. and I have tried several avenues mm-hmm. to get help for him. And like the young lady said, once they get out of the program, mm-hmm. They have no transition place, you know. And even when I tried to get him in a place for transition, he needed a reference from Stepping Stone. So he had to go back into Stepping Stone for another 14, 21 days to even get a reference to a place that would take him on a long-term basis. So that needs to change, you know. If you've been to Stepping Stone four or five times, you should have somewhere to go where you can get some long-term treatment mm-hmm. as versus going to jail or mm-hmm. Being committed to a mental institution because mm-hmm. We just don't have the facilities or anything here in the Evansville area to handle that.
Yeah.
That's right.
And it's just an ongoing problem. They go in, they recover, and then they get back out here in the streets or just to go to work, and there's somebody standing there with, you know, giving them drugs just to get them back
mm-hmm.
into the system again. And something needs to be done. And I applaud y'all for developing a task force to look into that in our community.
Well, thank you.
Wow. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm glad we're getting callers because we're going to need all the help that we can get. To the callers and people that's listening, the plan is, we got to start talking. We've got to start openly talking. Mm-hmm. I want to see the task force, once we get organized in-house, we have a public forum at least quarterly, Central City, preferably C.K. Newsom. We're going to do a lot of big advertising. Mothers come, fathers come, and the people on the task force will be there to answer questions. We have Judge Trockman, who is on the task force. We have Kelly, who is on the task force. So you're talking about people from different backgrounds. And we have a very diverse task force. Some of the people on there are people that work in social services. You got people that work in the judicial system. You got people that work for the prosecutor's office. You got people like me that is just likes to raise hell anyway. So, you know, you got this is the first truly diverse task force or committee that I've worked on that is truly diverse. Lisa, right here, mm-hmm. our host, she's on the task force. She and I are going to do the publicity together. We're getting there, but we're taking it slow. Eric Williams, the sheriff, he's on the task force. So we got a lot of other people. We got about 25 members. The one kid that I really am so proud of, and I hope he's not listening because he's probably going to crawl on his desk when he hears me talk about him, is Greg Jackson who's in customer service at Old National Bank, Kentucky in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
He's agreed to be on the task force. He wants to be on the mission statement committee. Such a gentleman. I want young black men to see, it's tough for him, he works two jobs, but such a gentleman. always respectful, and I know there's a lot of other black, young black men in the community like that. Where I work, I see black men coming and going from 18 to 40, and every chance I get on them. I said, I don't want to see your face out here anymore, okay? And they always, yes, Miss Marvelline. And so I don't dog them out, but I let them know that I love them, and I don't want them in the judicial system, I mean, in the prison system for the rest of their lives.
That's right. Mm.
I know that's right, and that's why I said I'm happy to see this coming to the light, and I didn't understand at first about drug addiction. Mm-hmm. It's been a long learning process for me, but now that I do, and I see that it's really something that the black community has got to address.
Yep.
You know, we've got to save our young men, and they're you know, there's so much potential being lost.
Mm-hmm.
And I must say that my son, he's been committed a bunch of petty crimes, and the last time he walked into the courtroom, they gave him another date to come back, and he walked out of the courtroom, and then he went back and asked to speak to the judge, and it was Judge Tarnata. And he agreed to see my son, and they talked for about a half an hour. And so the judges are moving in that direction, you know, where incarceration is not the answer. And I understand that Ms. Markham, Jill Markham, she's working, trying to get something done about the problem, you know. So I just applaud everybody that's, you know, helping. And if I can help, then I've got the phone number for Kelly, and I'll be calling her so I can help, because like you say, education is the key. We need to communicate the problem and get people educated to what it's doing to our families and our communities.
You know what? There's not been a social change in this country in my lifetime that wasn't led by mothers like you all that have children, that you, they're your babies till they're 99, and you have headed up the social change. So join this committee, Mom.
And you know,
okay.
Lisa, and you know, Lisa, not only do we want people to join the committee, but when the committee begins to do things publicly, we are going to need the mothers, the fathers, the former people who have recovered, the people like myself who know the difficulties and the challenges. We're the ones that need to show up at these public events.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would do no good to just have the task force or the committee members of 25, 30 people here speaking for our community without the members of the community coming together, recognizing that there really is power in numbers. And so many times what happens in our community, we leave the fight to the few people, you know, who come up with
that's
the idea.
Right.
That's
but we all have to get involved. You know, I think we can make a powerful statement. You know, if we, you know, converged upon C.K. Newsom by the hundreds.
Look what Mothers Against Drunk Drivers
did.
Yeah, that's right. That's what we need. We need to get the public educated and let them know what we can do.
And we need to get involved.
Do you guys think the black community by now for sure, and forgive my ignorance, has to know that there is a problem with alcohol and drugs in the community?
Yes, but it's just like everything else. If it's not directly affecting you, then you can walk past it.
Nobody talks
you know, you can ignore it, and that's what we've been doing. So it's time for us to say, stop, enough is enough, and get out and do something about it.
Wow.
It's so much that we could talk about today, but we're trying to give enough information so that people will know what it is that we want to accomplish. It may take years, but how long have we been in this condition?
You know,
years
and you know,
years.
And you know, Marmalade, that's one of the problems that we face. A lot of times when we become involved in, you know, initiatives like this, because we don't see an immediate turnaround in 30 days, 60 days, we tire and we throw in the towel. And I think you made a very valid point. We have got to become involved, stay committed for the long haul, because this is a problem
that's
that did
what
not,
I said. If you've dealt with this problem for 5 or 6 years, surely you can commit to 5 or 6 more years of getting it turned around.
Most
that's definitely. The way I feel about it. I'm totally committed to turning this situation around in our community.
And you know, I have to say this. I'm a person that's suspicious by nature. And being a black female, I have a right to be suspicious. I don't think all the drugs coming in our community is an accident.
No.
It's a conspiracy. And our kids got caught up in it. and it got bigger than them. And it's like the cancer again. There are certain stages, and when you get to the fourth stage, it's either death or prison. Now, who's in prison?
Our kids.
Okay.
Look what they found out about the tobacco industry.
Right, exactly.
They planted stuff in there to addict us to cigarettes.
So
I'm with you. I think it was a deliberate act to get those drugs into our community.
And you know, not only that, I'm concerned about the racial disparity in sentencing.
Okay.
In incarceration.
We just had one.
Yeah, you know, we just had one. I mean,
talk about it, Kelly.
Oh, racial disparity. You want to close with that? How does that affect the black community when they see white people getting off for dealing in incredible amounts of drugs?
$40,000 worth of marijuana.
Yeah.
Ooh, yep. He got community service and probation. I personally know people in the African American community, women, first time offenses, getting caught with significantly smaller amounts, and they've been getting 2 years, you know, they're getting
I think everyone was shocked, not just the black community at that sentence. You know, it was so obviously
politics, and it's not who you know, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Mm-hmm. That was a classic example of money and prestige.
I was offended that because he, not so much his color, but his status as a counselor, I wouldn't want him counseling anybody, a kid or otherwise. Mm-hmm. But I think that judicial system kind of screwed up.
They dropped the ball. Most of
them. They dropped the ball. Yeah.
They dropped the ball.
Yeah.
It was just unconscionable.
It was a slap in the face.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and you got young people. No excuse for anybody selling drugs. I'm deadly against that. But you've got them getting 10, 20 years for a nonviolent crime.
That's right.
Hey, something is wrong. So we're not trying to. We are. We're trying to fix the system. But we're also trying to fix our community.
And I think change that mindset in the legal system and in our community that makes them think that they can do something like that, and it goes unnoticed. You know, and that says a lot about what they think about us as a community. You know, if they knew that we were going to show up at the courthouse steps, if we were going to protest, if we were going to, you know, if they knew we would do that, there's no way they would have done it. But they were banking on the fact that they could brush it on the rug, and we would just let it, and it would go quietly away.
And we did.
And we did.
And your children are locked up.
And our children are locked up.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, as you can see, caller, please do get in touch with Kelly or Marvelline. Your voice is powerful. Every voice is. So they are really, really proactive about this issue. And as Marvelline and Kelly said, educate, educate, educate. Repetition, repetition, repetition. So
let me say quickly before we have to go is to the listeners or to the people that's on the task force, we should be having an organizational meeting with April. I sent out a mass email to everyone saying, let me know what Saturday, it's the only Saturday we'll meet, because I know folks don't want us getting into their weekends, but we need to do this one Saturday afternoon at about 1 or 2 o'clock and get organized and see who's going to chair which committees. I've already got commitments for like Wayne Trockman, a few others that's willing to chair committees, but we need to get this organized and off the ground.
Give us your email address again, Marvelline, so they know how to get in touch with you.
All the task force members know, huh?
Even the community.
It's my name, M-A-R-V as in Victor, A-L-I-N-E. Prince, P-R-I-N-C-E, all one word, lowercase, at att.net.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Well, thank you, and anybody can call Radio Rehab, and I'm sure anybody here will lead you to Marvelline or Kelly as well. Well, in closing, what a wonderful show. Thank you, all you callers. We have still so much more to talk about. Anything in closing we need to say, Kelly or Marvelline?
I just need the task force members to respond to my email by March 8th.
Okay.
Or you'll be getting a phone call.
Uh-oh. It sounds like a theme for this Saturday is enough is enough. People are ready to take their voice and do more. Marvelline's going to close with a meditation from our favorite Marvin Gaye.
Okay. This is the book that was written by my Dyson, the biography, not the autobiography. And he says, Louvain Demps thinks that Marvin's paranoia was driven as much by guilt and the burden of the past as by drugs. Marvin used drugs, we all know that. When you don't get things straightened up, you've got a lot of baggage to carry in your life. Whether you live to be 50 or 150, if you don't go back to straighten that stuff up, just imagine one sin after another. It's like every year wearing an overcoat on top of the one you already have.
Wow.
And you never remove them. It's layer upon layer upon layer. So no wonder the guy was paranoid. He never got rid of the stuff.
Wow, get rid of the stuff.
Get rid of the stuff. The coats.
Phew. Well, thank you, Kelly, for your energy and love, especially trying to get some transitional housing. Sounds like everybody that called in sees a need for that. Marvelline, you're awesome too.
Oh, yes,
thank you
is.
For taking all your energy and hostility and putting it into a force for good. We need to be mad.
It's going to work.
Absolutely. And you all will come back?
Yes.
Regularly and update us?
Yes, we will.
Good. Well, Radio Rehab, we're at 12:30. Thanks for tuning in. And don't forget between now and next week to do the next right thing.